VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the Internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
We do thank you for joining us on Crosstalk today here on VCY America. Ladies and gentlemen, the outcome of the 2020 presidential election continues to hang in the balance. Though the major media early on declared a Biden win, there are multiple battleground states in which numerous challenges continue. And as such, these states have sent two sets of electors to the United States Congress when they meet on January 6th for certification of the electoral vote. Certain members of Congress have indicated they're going to challenge the vote. Others indicate Vice President Pence has a major say in what happens. Well, according to our guest today, the presidency could still go either way. So what is the pathway for President Trump to win? Joining us today on Crosstalk, we welcome Rick Green. He's an attorney, a constitutional expert, a former Texas state representative, and founder of the leadership group Patriot Academy. Rick, thanks for joining us today here on Crosstalk.
Jim, my pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
For the most part, Rick, as you know, the Republican establishment has said, hey, it's time to move on. Voters have decided the presidency, and including Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. Is it time just to move on?
Not if you love the Constitution. Not if you love the rule of law. It's no longer about Trump or Pence or Biden or Harris. It's very much about, are we going to be governed as a constitutional republic? Are we going to let governors act like dictators and make up the election laws on their own? Is our Congress going to strip the powers of the vice president that's given in the Constitution and make up laws without amending the Constitution? Those are the kind of questions that we're answering as we walk through this process that is vitally important. It's definitely not the first time. We've been here in multiple elections in our history. It's a little bit unique in some ways, but it's very much like 1876 and 1824. And so I encourage people to say, hey, you know, just kind of slow down. Let's make sure we get all the way through the process before we give in. And also we have to give people confidence that if there are shenanigans in an election, that we're going to see it through, that we're going to investigate, that we're going to use legal remedies to try to correct the situation. So a lot of ways we could go with this. We could, you know, if you want, we could talk about how we get election integrity and what it truly looks like and the changes can be made there. But also even the lawsuit by Louis Gohmert out of Texas that is, you know, meant to clarify the role of the vice president on January 6th.
So we're going to break down all of these issues here today, Rick. Let me just say this, though, because there are those who are saying, Okay, let's move on. Let's just wait until the next election, 2024. Others are saying we can't do that. It may be too late. If we allow the processes that have brought us to this point to stand, there's not going to be a 2024 honest election.
Think of it like a parent. You know, if your toddler or your young child does something that you know is wrong and you just say, maybe they'll get it right next time or we'll deal with that next time. Are they likely to do it wrong again? Absolutely, yes. And so if we just kind of turn our heads and go, okay, we're just going to let this one go, then what we're saying is to those governors who ignored the Constitution and ignored the rule of law and broke the laws in their own state by changing the election laws at the last minute, and to those who participated in fraud, we're saying to both of those groups, hey, you got away with it. Why not try it again in 2022? Do it again in 2024. So we encourage more of the bad behavior. That's why I say it's about so much more than Trump or Biden. This is about the rule of law. It's about the Constitution, and we have to fight for that, even if it's after January 20th. Honestly, Jim, I mean, even, you know, no matter what happens on January 6th or January 20th, that we would continue to press the issue that we must have free and fair elections or the republic falls apart. We've got to have confidence in our elections.
You indicate that there are still three inflection points in the process where the presidency could go either way, and I'd like to explore those. The first has a very, very tight window now that involves state legislatures. Tell us about it.
You know, I've been so disappointed in the Republican legislatures in these key states that didn't do what they are constitutionally expected to do. They are given the most power, in fact, not just in this situation, but in so many others. The founders understood the state legislators would be the closest to the people. Let's make sure they have the ability even to put the federal government in check when needed. But in this situation, they have the power to choose how the electors are chosen. And when all of this happened, you know, even before November 3rd, when Pennsylvania was changing their election laws, when I say Pennsylvania, I mean the governor and the secretary of state, without authority, a lot of us were calling on the legislature, hey, stop this now before the election, and they didn't do that. And it's a Republican legislature. Well, then after the election, when everybody, you know, it was very obvious there was a lot of problems, they could have still fixed the situation by naming their own slate of electors. And the Supreme Court itself has actually signed off on this three times. The Supreme Court has said in Bush v. Gore, in the case this summer about faithless electors, and way back 100 years ago in a case called McPherson, they have said that the state legislators have a, quote, plenary power to choose the electors and that they can take it back at, quote, any time. And so they could have done that. And you're right, that window is closing. We've been really shouting from the rooftops for them to do that over the last 6 weeks, and they just haven't had the backbone to do it. They still could. You know, there's still a limited amount of time to do that, but that window is probably closed. Well, fortunately, we did have, you know, Republican, some legislators and some Republican parties that went ahead and did the slate of electors and sent them to D.C., but it would have been better if the legislative bodies had done that as an entire entity.
So with the certification vote next Wednesday, is there any movement going on anywhere? I mean, we're talking about the battleground states, Pennsylvania, Georgia, Michigan, Wisconsin, Arizona. Is there any indication that any of these state legislatures is advancing toward that end?
No, I think the brakes have been put on. I haven't heard of any additional movement at this point. It looked like we might get there in a couple of those states, but they just, I don't know a nice way to say it, they wimped out. They did not see it through. The political pressure was too much. The efforts and the narrative nationally with the media to act like this is over, and to try to just cover it up and not investigate, it won out with those legislators. So I would say that door's probably shut. However, I would say it is really good that those seven states sent that second slate of electors, because that somewhat empowers both Mike Pence and the Congress to at least have some movement there, that where they could then raise the issue of, okay, why do we have two slates? What happened in those states to cause this confusion? And that would be our second area that we could cover.
Okay, well, let's talk about it right now. And it's this area in which you state Congress can uphold the Constitution. And we know they're meeting January 6th, but explain this option, because it seems that they're coming together simply to certify the electoral vote from the states. But this is more than just a ceremonial function from this body.
Yeah, let's look at it historically. There have been many elections where electors have been rejected by the Congress. Other examples where they've been debated and then accepted. Sometimes members of Congress objected, and the vice president on his own chose to accept those electors and refuse the objections themselves. So there are a lot of examples in history to say there's different ways that this could be done. I want to say, you know, constitutionally, it's very simple. 12th Amendment's very simple. All it says is that the vice president will preside over this, and the vice president will open the ballots and count them. The only role of the Congress, according to the 12th Amendment, is to be, quote, present. Now, historically, the Congress has been involved and has objected or not objected. They've debated it. Sometimes they've broken into, you know, the Senate went back over to their chamber and they debated and the House debated. There's a federal law that was passed in 1887 that really lays out a very complicated process that nobody really understands. It's the worst written statute in the history of man. And all the experts agree on is that the experts don't agree on anything about this statute. It's really, really messed up. And I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to mention with this because many ask, what does the vice president have to do with all of this? Because we see there's a lawsuit that's been filed against him by Congressman Louis Gohmert. And I am seeing those who are saying the vice president does have some authority over this process. And others say, no, he does not have authority over this process.
Yeah, so constitutionally, absolutely does. That language is very clear in the 12th Amendment. Historically, he has done that, and he goes all the way back to 1800 was the first time that a vice president opening those ballots refused objections and quickly counted the Georgia electors, even though there was really prima facie evidence that they were not done correctly. But Thomas Jefferson accepted them. And some people say, well, Mike Pence has a bias here. He shouldn't be able to make that decision because he's on the ticket with Donald Trump. Well, Thomas Jefferson was the candidate for president when he was opening those ballots, and he would not have won the presidency very likely if he had rejected those ballots, because it would have opened the door for the Federalists to have some of their guys when it went over to the House. That's a complicated one. They ended up in a tie, and it went over to the House. But when the tie went to the House, it was only he and Aaron Burr. Had he not counted Georgia, it would have been all five of the candidates, and the Federalist House of Representatives probably would have chose one of the Federalist John Adams or Pinckney or Jay. But all of that to say, that happened in 1800. Richard Nixon, even as recent as 1961, rejected the objections with regard to Hawaii. Hawaii had sent two sets of electors. Initially, Nixon won. Republicans sent their electors. They had a recount, and Kennedy ended up winning in a very close race. And so the Democrats sent their electors much later, just like what's happened this year. And when the objections occurred, when they went to count the ballots, Nixon refused to listen to the objections, and he actually counted the Democrat electors, and he said, it's over. I'm not going to allow the objections to take place. So he used that power. Al Gore used that power in 2000 in very much the same way dealing with Florida. There were objections from the floor. He refused to hear them. So I've heard some quote-unquote experts get on and say the vice president is only there ceremonially. He has no power. And then in the same interview say, but the vice president, when Gore refused those objections, he used his power wisely. Okay, wait, either he has power
right.
or he doesn't have power.
Right.
And he definitely does constitutionally and historically.
Yeah, double standard there. Now, we understand, too, that there are several House members that said that they're going to be raising objection to the certification of that came from the states. And as of this week as well, because it takes somebody from both the House and the Senate, Senator Josh Hawley of Missouri, he came forward and said, and here's a quote, he said, I cannot vote to certify the Electoral College results on January 6th without raising the fact that some states, particularly Pennsylvania, failed to follow their own state election laws. And I cannot vote to certify without pointing the unprecedented effort of mega corporations, including Facebook and Twitter, to interfere in this election and support of Joe Biden. It looks like there's going to be both the House and the Senate that is going to be raising objection.
A constitutional champion right there. You know, I'm so proud of Josh for doing this, and I think other senators will join him. I frankly think any congressman or senator that does not object is agreeing to the lawlessness. They're actually signing off on what these states did in breaking the Constitution and breaking the law. So I think it's a really good sign. So if I could, let me just walk through the scenarios that could happen here.
Please.
If Louis Gohmert wins his lawsuit, what he's raising in that lawsuit is a very, very important point, and that is the vice president is the one that counts the ballots and either rejects or doesn't reject. The Congress does not have the power to object. The 12th Amendment doesn't give them that power. Though they've done that historically, the Constitution doesn't give it to them. His argument is that 1887 law is a federal law that's passed by Congress. It's not a constitutional amendment, and that it was. And when they passed that law, they literally stripped the vice president of the power to make those decisions and gave it to the House and the Senate. And his point is, you couldn't do that. We wouldn't support that any more than we should support Congress passing a law to strip the president of a constitutional power, like the ability to pardon someone or to appoint justices. Those are constitutionally given powers that we the people gave through the Constitution. In the same way, the vice president has that power. And if Congress doesn't want the vice president to have that power, or if we the people say that's too much power in one hand, or it's too biased of a set of hands to be making those decisions, then great, let's have a constitutional amendment to change that. But I would point out that the 12th Amendment was adopted after the 1800 election. So if we thought Jefferson acted with too much self-interest, we would have changed it with the 12th Amendment, and we didn't.
Tell you what, we're going to have to break right here. With us today, Rick Green, an attorney, constitutional expert, and also a founder of the leadership group Patriot Academy. We're discussing the U.S. presidency hanging in the balance and the pathway for President Donald Trump to have a second term. We'll be back in 1 minute. You're listening to Crosstalk.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, geologist and president of the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, do creationists say that the biblical flood laid down all the fossils?
No, we don't, Chris. Now, we do think that the flood of Noah's day is responsible for most of the fossils in geologic strata, but certainly not all. We talk about a time of residual catastrophism after the flood, which included the Ice Age. During this time, a lot of fossils were formed. Ice Age fossils would typically lie on top of the flood fossils, which came earlier. Now, of course, there are some fossils being formed today in minor catastrophes, minor floods, minor tsunamis. But these are of local extent, not like the fossils in strata from the flood. Chris, the biblical story of Noah's flood is absolutely essential for a full creation understanding. Let's go back to Genesis and get it right.
To learn more about creation, get our free DVD called That's a Fact. Call us at 800-628-7640 and mention the promo code FACT.
Thank you.
You're listening to Crosstalk on BCY America. U.S. presidency hanging in the balance. With us today is Rick Green. Rick is an attorney. He's a former Texas state representative, a constitutional expert. We're discussing the pathways for President Donald Trump to have the second term, which many believe that this election has been stolen, as what we have been proclaimed to us by media very early on in this. I mean, it's no surprise that Hillary Clinton said early on, whatever you do, do not concede this election. We have Joe Biden himself talking about having the most extensive voter fraud apparatus. You know, a lot of questions remaining yet. But right now we're talking about the pathways yet for a Trump presidency for a second term. And Rick, we were talking about this lawsuit from Louie Gohmert pertaining to the vice president himself. And is there time? Do we have a court docket? Do we know when a court's even going to decide the status of this Gohmert lawsuit?
Yeah, you know, part of the way that they did this was to get an expedited hearing. The judge has granted that expedited process. There won't be even a full hearing. Because it's all based on the historical record anyway. And so the judge is supposed to hear from the defendant, which is Pence in this case. I know that sounds weird to people, but the reason for that is essentially that the congressman and the electors from Arizona, the plaintiffs, have to sort of force the vice president's hand here. There had to be a defendant to get this before a judge to get a ruling to clarify, is that 1887 law unconstitutional based on what we were talking about before the break, because of it being just Congress trying to strip the vice president of a power without doing a constitutional amendment. And then I think that what they're asking for is the judge to give a ruling Monday the 4th, which is getting really close, obviously, yes. But Monday the 4th. And I think obviously that would get appealed to the U.S. Supreme Court. But what will happen is if the judge rules on any of the major points, whether it's yes, the vice president has this power, whether it's no, the Congress does not have the power to be the ones to object, it's entirely in his hand. Or it's also, there's a really important third point in the lawsuit, which is if Congress has an objection and then has to vote on that objection, they have to vote like the 12th Amendment describes the vote. And what I mean by that is if you have a contingent election, which we've had several of those in, you know, like I said, 1824, there's been others. But if you have a contingent election where the House chooses the president, they have to vote by state. They don't go in there and 435 people vote. In that case, a Democrat would win and should win if that was the way that they were supposed to vote according to the Constitution. But that's not how it's done. It's by state. And so each state has to get together, and if the Republicans dominate that delegation from that particular state, then they're going to vote for the Republican. And Republicans have 26, 27, I forget now, states. So Trump would win under that scenario, and that's a very important distinction the government makes in the lawsuit. So if he wins on any of those points, then Trump is going to win. If he does not win on the point that Pence has the ability and not Congress, so let's say that they get in there and Pence opens up Arizona, And he doesn't either use the power that he's been given, or the judge has ruled that he can't, and he decides to follow that judge, even though I think you could do what you believe the Constitution says you could do when you're in that position, and then they can sue later. But at any rate, if Pence decides, I'm not going to do it myself, well, then Josh Hawley saying that he's going to object, and a member of Congress objecting, what they're doing there is they're following that 1887 process. That federal law, the Electoral Count Act, lays out this incredibly complicated process, and most scholars, well, I mean, some say that you got to have a member from each chamber object, some say only one chamber, but if you get one from both chambers, then you've definitely got an objection. And what they'll do at that point is the senators will literally recess from the joint session, and they'll go back over to their side, they'll go cross over the rotunda and head over to their side of the Capitol, and they will debate Arizona's delegates, possibly one state at a time, possibly all seven of them. There's two different historical precedents for that. But bottom line is the Senate will debate it, the House will debate it, and if Gohmert, if that part of Gohmert's suit is, if he wins on that very small technicality nobody's talking about yet, I just want to project out there, if he wins on that, then the House will have to vote by state on whether or not to reject these ballots. And I think in that case, there's a really good chance that they would do so. And the Senate will vote, you know, individually, but still with a slim margin of probably 50 to 48, because the Georgia senators probably will not be seated by then. We'll see. Either 50 to 48 or 52 to 48. But either way, both could end up rejecting. And, wow, you really want to run down some rabbit trails. If they reject, then neither candidate has 270. And so it either goes back to the House to decide president and back to the Senate to decide vice president, or some say, I'm sorry for all the caveats here, but the 12th Amendment also says the whole number of electors. So is that number 538, or now that we've kicked out seven states, is that number, you know, in the low 400s? If that number changes, which some people think, and there is historical precedent, one time where an elector was thrown out and the number was reduced, then Trump will win outright. There wouldn't even be a vote in the House. If it stays 538, then nobody has 270. Nobody's got a majority. So then it goes to the House, and in that case, Trump wins. So all of that to say, under any of those scenarios, Trump would win. And that's why I think people got to realize there really is a chance that this election still goes to Trump on January 6th. In fact, I'll put it this way. If the Constitution is followed, and if Vice President Pence does what he has the power to do under the Constitution, or if they follow that federal law and Congress does what it's supposed to do under the Constitution, then Trump absolutely will be president for a second term. Now, I don't have a lot of faith in the backbone of politicians these days, so I'm not saying that's going to happen. I think there's a 10 to 20% chance that that happens. But my odds there are based on the backbone of politicians, not based on what the Constitution says.
Right, right, yeah. If it were based upon the Constitution, it's a no-brainer. But based upon the backbone, it's a pretty big if that you talk about here. Let's talk about one other scenario that you point out as well, and that is for the Supreme Court to decide. Tell us about that option.
Yeah, you know, there's still some lawsuits that are before the Supreme Court. There's still some things that they've kicked down the road even after January 6th, but prior to January 20th. I do not think it's impossible that they would still intervene in a way that could even reverse what happens on January 6th. That would be unprecedented, but not necessarily unconstitutional or not necessarily, you know, certainly wouldn't prevent us from getting to the right answer. The right answer, everybody should agree, is who actually won the most legal votes in those states and won the most legal electoral votes in the Electoral College. And if everybody agrees that's truth and that's what we're actually after, then if we don't figure that out until January 15th, then we should still, you know, put the right person in office. And frankly, even if it happened after January 20th, who says that you can't reverse and put the right person in office if you discovered that it was done wrong? So I think the Supreme Court could still make some decisions here. When I say could, I would also say should, but that doesn't mean they will. I'm really disappointed in the courts throughout 2020. They have failed us miserably with the COVID fascism out there where they did not protect our rights. They did not uphold the Constitution. They let governors do whatever they wanted. That's not a republic. That's a dictatorship. The courts did not, you know, uphold the rule of law with the election process in Pennsylvania when they changed the law there. They have not been willing to intervene and uphold the Constitution to this point, but they also haven't heard an entire case. Everything has been injunctive relief. And what that means for folks is that all they're basing the decision on is what's in the pleadings, the paper that was put in front of them. There's no actual hearing. There's no evidence presented to them. The plaintiffs are asking for an immediate result. And it's hard to get a court to do that. I mean, that is injunctive relief is not, you know, that's not as common as people would think. And so I don't think because they refused injunctive relief that means they would not ever look at the case and ever come to a good conclusion. But just as you said earlier, Jim, I mean, the doors are closing, and at some point they're going to be too afraid to act simply because the American people, you know, they've been lied to so much at this point. It will already be a shock to the system. If the Constitution is followed and Donald Trump ends up getting sworn in on January 20th, you can bet that based on the disservice of our press, not letting the American people know that all of this is very possible, it's not unprecedented, it's historical, people are going to think that it was stolen,
right,
even though it wasn't.
One of the basic issues in all of this, Rick, has come up this election is the number of state election officials that have just changed the election law without the approval of their state legislature. I'm talking to you from Wisconsin. That happened in our state where you have election officials just changing the law. They didn't have the approval of the state legislature, and we know this is blatantly unconstitutional, yet this occurred in many states. Are judges blinded to this, that we've seen them refuse to act on so many occasions? It's just appalling to see the lack of action as far as a constitutional action as it relates to these scenarios.
Yeah, and think about that, Jim. Think about how basic a principle we're talking about here. We're talking about separation of powers, and we're talking about the basic legislative process that we in America don't like kings. We don't want dictators. We believe in a legislative process where our representatives from all over the state will come together and debate an issue and come to hopefully the right decision. And then our governor has the chance to veto it or not. But that's the legislative process. At least, you know, I grew up on Schoolhouse Rocks on Saturday morning. Hmm. I remember.
Yeah.
I'm a Bill, you know?
Yeah,
I mean,
yep. I'm on my way to Capitol Hill.
Yes. I mean, it's like, have we done such a bad job? And unfortunately, I know the answer to that. We have done such a bad job of educating in America that people don't have a problem with this, that they aren't, you know, literally. I mean, we should have peaceful protests all over the country over the fact that governors are acting like dictators. I think the real problem was we let them get away with it in COVID because of everybody acting out of fear. And the Constitution doesn't sleep during a pandemic. The Constitution doesn't. Your rights should be most zealously protected when you're in a crisis, right? And we allowed these governors to do these things week after week and then month after month, all because of COVID, when the science didn't even back up their decisions. That's a whole other topic. But we allowed that to happen. And so then when the election came along, you know, they were kind of used to being dictators. It was like, if I can blame COVID, then I can do anything. So I'm going to blame COVID for changing the way we elect our representatives and elect our president. I mean, when you step back and look at it, yeah, it's shocking.
Yes.
And it's very shocking that the courts would not slap that down and say, that's absolutely unconstitutional. We are defenders of the Constitution. But the cowards of the courts refuse to do the one thing we really want them to do. You know, for 50 years, the courts have been doing things they don't have the power to do, that the Constitution does not give them the power to do. And here we are, the one thing they're supposed to do, defend the Constitution, uphold the rule of law, and they absolutely cowered away and kicked the can down the road. It's so disheartening. But the good news is, it has awakened people like crazy. I mean, I've been doing this 30 years, Jim. I've never seen the level of interest in the Constitution. We've had 4,000 people sign up to be Constitution coaches, hosting classes all over the country.
Wow.
I got a Monday night class right now going with 15,000 people, largest Constitution class in history. I'm telling you, people are hungry for truth. They're hungry for biblical truth of how a society should work. That's really exciting to see the churches and see pastors saying, you know what, we've got to be more involved. We've got a duty here to steward this freedom that we've been given. And the Bible has answers for every area of our life. It has answers for how we're supposed to form our neighborhoods and our society. We need to be looking at what a biblical citizen looks like and how do we as biblical citizens restore those principles. That's what excites me, is that people are asking those kind of questions, and I haven't seen that in my lifetime.
How is it our listeners can get more information about the constitutional coaching?
You bet. ConstitutionCoach.com is our website. We've actually got a new one coming out, a new version of our Constitution class called Biblical Citizenship in Modern America. It's going to be released late next week. So excited about this. A lot of great folks in it. Matt Staver, a mutual friend of ours, is in it. We've got, David Barton and Tim Barton and Rabbi Lappin. We've got, Jack Hibbs and Rob McCoy, Kirk Cameron, all talking about what does the Bible say with regard to our duty as a citizen. And then what does the Constitution say in our particular system of freedom that my job is, if I'm part of We the People? It's super encouraging. People will be inspired, and they'll be given some hope.
Our number to Crosstalk, 800-733-9829. That's 800-733-9829. Rick Green is with us today, an attorney, constitutional expert. By the way, that's constitutionalcoach.com. Back in a minute. This is Crosstalk.
High in the Swiss Alps, Lucian, a lonely, frightened 13-year-old, is overtaken by catastrophic events as he causes little Danny to fall off of a cliff. Lucian finds himself an outcast with his family, his school friends, and especially the very hostile Annette, the sister of Danny.
Danny, I told you not to talk to Lucian. He'll only hurt you again.
Bitterness and anger set in. As Lucian finds solitude in the nearby woods, he comes across a woodcarver who helps him find the peace he was looking for, that not only changes his life, but that of others as well.
You may be able to run away from the village, but you can't run away from yourself.
Treasures of the Snow quickly captures the heart. It's a story of friendship, forgiveness, and redemption. Treasures of the Snow is available on DVD for a donation of $16 or more by calling VCY America at 1-800-729-9829. That's 1-800-729-9829.
Again, our number to Crosstalk is 800-733-9829, 800-733-9829. Rick Green is our guest here today, and folks, critical issues that are before us. Want to mention something here. One of the mentions, silver lining in the cloud is that many people are awakening to our Constitution once again. My question is, do you have a copy? Do you have a copy of the Constitution? Crosstalk does make available, I'm mentioning it here again, documents of freedom that includes the Constitution of the United States, the Bill of Rights. We've got all the amendments that have been passed since the Constitution was drafted. The Declaration of Independence, George Washington's farewell address. This booklet is available, our way of saying thank you for your support of $5 or more to Crosstalk. That includes shipping to you. And if you'd like to obtain a copy or multiple copies to hand out, simply give us our main switchboard a call at 800-729-9829. That's 800-729-9829. And ask for documents of freedom, and again, a donation of $5, and getting this in your hand. And I think it's important, Rick, that people read the Constitution. We're supposed to be governed by it. We better know what it says.
Man, Jim, you're spot on. I am so thrilled that y'all do that as well, that you give it out. There's a first Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court was John Jay. He was one of the guys that gave us the Constitution. He actually was one of the authors of the Federalist Paper, which is sort of our instruction manual on the Constitution. And he said that every member of the state ought diligently to read and study the Constitution so that they'll know their rights, they'll know when their rights have been violated, and they'll be the better prepared to defend and assert them. That really is why we should study the Constitution. I think, as we were talking about earlier, the whole, allowing governors to be dictators, allowing our freedoms to be infringed upon this year, I think in large part was because we, as a nation, don't know our rights. So we did not perceive the violation. We thought, oh, this is just what government does. And we didn't realize. We didn't know our history. We bought the lie that in 1918 they did all this stuff when we had Spanish flu. They did not. We never had this kind of a shutdown or anything. So, I mean, John Jay was right. If we don't know our rights, we won't perceive they've been violated.
Yeah.
And when we do know our rights, when that perception happens, there's a proper, peaceable way to defend and assert them. But we have to be good students of freedom, good citizens, and as we were saying earlier, good biblical citizens. Not only knowing the Constitution, but knowing what the Bible says about how we should act as citizens.
Amen. So, folks, again, the number to obtain that donation of $5, you can go to vcyamerica.org, vcyamerica.org, or call us at 800-729-9829. Let's begin with Sarah in Prosser, Washington. You're on the air.
Hi, yeah. I was calling. I just had a question as to who exactly to contact or the process what it would look like as a private citizen to pursue anything in regards to our violation of our First Amendment rights here in the state. I know when I read some of the RCWs that were written in to the Declaration of a State of Emergency that it states in there in the state of Washington that it's only legal so long as it doesn't conflict with the First Amendment right to peaceably assemble. And so I'm just wondering, like, what sort of process that looks like to pursue that.
Rick?
Yeah, sir, you said state of Washington, right? Not Washington, D.C., but state of Washington?
Yes, the state of Washington.
Yeah, unfortunately, you're in one of the states where it's been just horrible. The governor really controlling, as these governors have said, literally the ingress and egress of their citizens. It's awful to see this happening. And these disaster acts, these statutes that many states adopted in the 70s, some of them later in the late 80s, but they're awful. They do not define the emergency powers. No one thought that they would do stay-at-home orders and these different things that they've done with a pandemic. Everybody thought that was for a hurricane. You shelter in place for a few hours, not for months.
Right.
And so they've really abused that power. But the answer to your question in terms of who to contact, it's a real problem because the courts were supposed to be our relief valve on this. That's where we were supposed to get some relief, and it hasn't happened. And so what people have been doing is just basically taking it in their own hands. I mean, literally, I have tons of church pastors and friends that are calling their church services peaceful protests in order to be able to meet and to fight off the sheriffs. As we said, our mutual friend Matt Staver and Liberty Council, they've got cases going in 40 states right now suing those governors to try to allow churches to meet and for, just like you're saying, peaceful gathering and assembly. All of the First Amendment rights have been violated during COVID. Virtually every part of the Bill of Rights has been violated during COVID. I wish I had a better answer for you. We do have a website at constitutioncoach.com. We have a Know Your Rights campaign.
And so if you have a specific claim, we'll connect you with someone like Matt Staver or Brad Dacus out there in Washington, Pacific Justice Institute. So if you go to constitutioncoach.com and scroll down to the Know Your Rights campaign, we can try to get you somebody if it's a specific claim. But what I'm telling people is until citizens all over on their own stand up and say no, this stuff is not going to stop. More people have got to do what the barbers have done, what the gym owners have done. Open your business. Open your church. Take the mask off. Get out there and live life. The science does not support what they're doing to us right now. And they're not going to stop the fascism until we, the people, say no more.
Sarah, thank you for the call. We're going next to Mark in Newark, Ohio. Mark, you're on the air.
Yeah, I agree with you. On this constitutional thing, I got one thing to say and one thing I should point out. One is I don't think the government people has the backbone to apply their own initiative towards this because they're all what they call their jobs. You know what I mean? They want to continue their job. They want to lose it. They don't want to
self-interest.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the other thing is, I do believe what you're saying about the Constitution, they ought to make a federal law or maybe even put this in the Constitution that all the citizens of the United States, including our government officials, have to go through a course of the Constitution for at least maybe 6 weeks and have to sign off on it stating that they went through this course.
Mark,
and
thank you. Thank you for that. We have long abandoned civics in our school here, Rick, and you know that's a great idea. We have the people being sworn into Congress saying we're going to uphold the Constitution, but many don't even know what it says.
Yeah, Jim, you're right. What Mark's talking about there is we used to call that education, right? I mean, we used to have civics education. In fact, most state constitutions where they authorize a public school system, they actually say in the Constitution the reason for that is to have an informed citizenry. Because if you're going to be a republic where you elect your leaders, you need an informed citizenry that understands how their government works. And we've failed at civics so bad. In fact, that's the underlying cause of the COVID fascism. It's the underlying cause of the riots in the streets this summer because we don't know our history. We don't know our Constitution and our rights. Hmm. And so that's where the restoration has to be. And since the schools have failed us so bad on that, we have to do it. And that's why we do constitutioncoach.com. It's why we get people to study it. I love Mark's comments, and really, we want the elected officials to do it, absolutely. But it starts with us first. We, the people, have to do it. And then we vote for people that are running for office that are, you know, talking about the Constitution. And they can say, I've been through these courses. In fact, we've got a new member of Congress right now that's going in right now from Colorado that's one of our Constitution graduates. I'm super excited about that. We're seeing more and more of that in our state legislatures. In fact, our Patriot Academy grads, we do a youth leadership program where we train them on the Constitution and biblical perspective, and they're serving in state legislatures across the country. They're serving as legislators, as chiefs of staff. They're all over the culture. But my point is, we've got to start with the young people. We've got to start with ourselves, and then we'll see it downstream in the elected officials.
Thank you, Mark, for the call. Mike is next in Marshfield, Wisconsin. You're on the air.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. I'd just like to point out there's a lot of us coming to Washington on the 6th to support our president. Thank you for standing up for the Constitution. Not to be redundant, but I think a lot of people need to hear this.
Mm-hmm.
You just said, is there a realistic chance that Mr. Trump could get reelected and inaugurated on the 20th?
I'm sorry, I missed your name. Say it again.
This is Mike.
Mike, okay. Mike, yeah, I think there is. I mean, it's a small percentage chance, not based on the facts or the Constitution itself, but based on the players, based on the people involved, and whether or not they're going to have the backbone to do it. Frankly, there's a lot of people in politics right now that have been cowered because of the riots, because of the threats, because of all those things. And then there are others that it's just a self-interest thing. They think they're going to be better off politically if they abandon not just Trump. They abandon the Constitution. They abandon us, the people that voted for Donald Trump. So I do think there's a chance, but it's small because of the political environment in Washington, D.C. It's getting, you know, there is a fire right now, though, and I think the good news is that no matter what they do, and I want to make this real clear to people, no matter whether Donald Trump or Joe Biden gets sworn in on January 20th, our duty as citizens and our duty as biblical citizens does not change. We still have to do our duty and stay involved. And frankly, we can turn it around no matter who gets elected if we will get active. We can stop the socialism that's coming if we will get active. There's going to be pain. It's going to take time. But let's start talking about what we can do in our homes and in our churches, regardless of who's president. I do think there's a chance. I think it's small. I think it's in the 10 to 15% range. And it's really going to come down to what does this judge do in the Louie Gohmert case? And what does Mike Pence do on January 6th?
Thank you, Mike, for the call. We've got our guest here for just a couple more minutes. Jackie in Mobile, Alabama, you're on the air.
My question is there going to be anyone there January the 6th to hold us to the Constitution?
Will there be anyone January 6th who does what?
Who keeps them, holds them to the duties of the Constitution, that you know, the vice president will do what he's supposed to, and they'll keep with the Constitution. Will there be anyone there to pin him to it?
Anybody to hold him accountable here, Rick?
Yeah, I think that's really the goal of the Gohmert lawsuit is to hold him accountable ahead of time. But even on that day as well, I think there are going to be some champions both in the House and Senate to help with that. And I'll say this about Pence. I've known him for almost 25 years now, and he's a great guy. He loves the Constitution. He's a man of God. He loves God's word. He's been loyal. He's done, I think, a fantastic job as vice president. And so I have hope that he will do the right thing. A lot of it's going to come down to who's advising him, what are the legal advisors saying that are around him, and the things that Louie Gohmert has brought up have been debated among Democrats and Republicans both. Everybody knows this 1887 law is a mess. Everybody knows it's confusing on what's supposed to be done. And so, you know, depending on the advice he gets, he may feel very emboldened to go in there and choose to throw out those seven states. And then again, he may be getting advice saying, no, there's no way you can do this. There's no way you're going to win. Don't fall on your sword. All that kind of stuff that people say in politics. So I wish I could, I wish I had a crystal ball to tell you for sure. But I do think there's going to be a lot of good champions standing up and saying the right thing on the 5th.
Thank you, Jackie. We squeeze one more call in before you have to leave here. And this is Richard in Washington State. Richard, you're on the air.
Thank you, Jim. Another super great guest. And what I'd like to ask Rick is, what does he think of the publication, The Founders' Constitution?
You familiar with that, Rick?
She's talking about the one that's the big, thick red one, right? It's got a red backing, and is that the one you're talking about?
No, the one I have is the paperback. It's not red, but it's five volumes. It's about 3,000 pages.
I'm trying to picture the right one here because it may be, you know, Congress has one that has all the Supreme Court rulings and everything. That's not the one you're talking about. You're talking about the one that has the writings of the founders along with each clause.
Is that the one here, Richard?
No, the one I have is two guys from New York.
Okay, we may be talking two different things here. We're not going to get it resolved. Yeah. We've got 15 seconds. What do you want to leave with the listeners here, Rick?
You know, I'd say even just based on that last question, what the founders believed and intended with regard to the Constitution is absolutely essential to having a stable Constitution. So original intent is vital. That's why we actually study, not just read, but study the Constitution. And it can be fun. We make it exciting. We don't do it in a boring way. So go to constitutioncoach.com. You'll have great fellowship, and you'll learn a lot about how the country works.
Rick, thank you for extending your time with us, and God bless you in your work.
Thanks, Jeff. God bless you.
Rick Green with us. He's has to run. He's got another interview here waiting for him for the next segment. So we'll come back with more of your calls in a moment. You're listening to Crosstalk.
For the Worldview Report, I'm Brandon House. Our website's worldviewreport.com. Recently, a friend of mine in the intelligence arena sent me a report that showed that the National Center for Counterterrorism is classifying, along with the FBI, as potential extremists, potential violent extremists, worthy of being monitored, anyone that complains about their perceived threat to their Second Amendment right. Yes, my friends, we've reached the day where the one that is the potential extremist or terrorist is American men, conservative, constitutionalist, Christian men. This has been going on for several years, back to the Obama administration and the Department of Homeland Security that wanted to label as potential terrorists people interested in the pro-life issue, national sovereignty, or even Bible prophecy. We need to be aware of the fact that we Americans are being set up by our own government as the problem, as the Marxists and Islamists take over the power centers of our nation.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. Our guest did have to run. He has been booked with many interviews and friends as he has laid out the scenarios, three potential ways that still could bring about a second term for Donald Trump as president. He had three ways, and one of which, though, the door is quickly closing on that, and that's for state legislatures to enact. And as he pointed out, the backbone has just not been there to do that. I do want to make mention of this as well. So much of what he has said, and you read his article, and he's referring to certain articles and sections of the U.S. Constitution. The question is, do you have a copy? Do you have one that you can refer to? Now, many can go online and quickly read through that, but if you'd like a pocket-sized document of freedom that includes the Constitution of the United States, the Bill of Rights, all the amendments that have been passed by the states since the Constitution was drafted, the Declaration of Independence, George Washington's farewell address, it's all in this handy booklet. It is, somewhere about near 60 pages, but if it's right in a shirt pocket, fits conveniently in a purse, we have these available at a donation of just $5 here from Crosstalk that covers your shipping to you. Our phone number here for obtaining that is 800-729-9829. That's 800-729-9829. Or by going to vcyamerica.org, vcyamerica.org. We have time for a few more of your comments here today in our final minutes at 800-733-9829, 800-733-9829. 9829. George in Olney, Illinois, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you for taking my call again. I just wanted to make a comment that this election has not been stolen. It is in the process of being, those people who perpetrated this are being surrounded by prayer, and they will receive due justice in a court of law.
Thank you, George. Yeah, there's an accountability that goes well beyond that which is taking place here in this day and this time. Certainly, that case is there. Matter of fact, be in prayer. Prayer is so very critical, and that's a very important item that all of us can be doing. As some people call and say, you know, there's nothing I can do in my state. My state is set in what it's doing here. But, folks, you can go to the King of Kings and Lord of Lords and make appeal before the throne of grace. Your petitions before him. And certainly that is something that all of us can do and should be doing as we look forward to this this date of January 6th in the Congress, and with this being presided over by Vice President Mike Pence. And one of the aspects is to force him constitutionally to do what he's supposed to do is this lawsuit from Louis Gohmert and Congressman Gohmert. In addition to that, ladies and gentlemen, President Trump this past Sunday urged his supporters to join others in Washington, D.C. on the 6th. And sent out in a tweet, he said, "See you in D.C." asking people to come. And certainly, as the organizer had said, to stop the steal protest movement is what they're involved in doing. Also, be praying regarding the race, the election coming up in Georgia on the 5th. There is so much at stake as it relates to the Georgia election. What's at stake is who will control the United States Senate for the next couple of years until the next election in 2022. It's been reported just recently on the Daily Wire that a federal judge in Georgia has blocked two counties from removing roughly 4,000 names from their voter rolls ahead of the runoff election to determine control of the U.S. Senate in January. So very interesting indeed. The district judge, Leslie Abrams Gardner, guess what, is sister to the former Georgia Democratic gubernatorial candidate, Stacey Abrams. She issued a restraining order against two counties on Monday over calls for her recusal from the case. The Obama-appointed judge ruled that the counties had improperly scrubbed names from the list of registered voters over unverified change of address data, according to Politico. The ruling came as a result of a challenge to over 360,000 names of allegedly improperly registered Georgia voters lodged by the Georgia Republican Party and the election watchdog group True the Vote. Let's go back to the phone lines here. We have Elvin calling in from Wisconsin. Elvin, you're on the air.
Hi. I have a couple of things to say. Number one, when we elect officials and put in justices on the Supreme Court, they're hanging out there alone. They're not protected. We need to protect them. And number two, there are 80 million of us. You know, we're not victims unless we decide to be victims. If all of us get together, put in $100, that's an incredible amount of power.
Thank you, Elvin. Putting your money where your mouth is.
Yeah, but it's getting it organized that's the problem.
Mm-hmm.
That's really who can do it and who do we go through and where do we do it?
Thank you for that. And let me just say again, one of the matters that our guest is involved in doing is training people in the Constitution itself and training Constitution coaches all across the United States. Again, their website, constitutioncoach.com. Let's go next to Jan in Wisconsin. You're on the air, Jan.
Hi. We called our state Senator Ron Johnson's office today, and it said the answering machine was full. Call back. So people, please do call back. And please keep praying about the election in Georgia that's coming up the day in early January. And also call your state legislatures. Kathy is one of them that I called. I can't remember her last name. And voice your very strong opinions against Christian and Jewish persecution in our country that could result if they don't act. I believe that the, I was told on Crosstalk or one of these programs that the wife of the head of the Senate, Mitch McConnell, is Chinese, and probably her relatives in China are being threatened by China. You never know. Be sure that you keep on praying for these people. He has too much control over the rest of the senators. They can bring in another electoral college decision if they want to. They did meet.
There are alternate electors for these states, and those have been sent to Washington as well. Thank you, Jan. Linda in Racine, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Jim. I just wanted to mention that I was on the phone with my pastor today, and we are establishing a prayer meeting next Monday evening. So I was going to encourage other churches, other listeners, to perhaps have a special prayer meeting prior to the certification.
Thank you, Linda. Thank you for that and said that suggestion. I'm out of time. But next Monday evening, they're meeting for prayer, encouraging others to do the same. The election is Tuesday in Georgia, Wednesday, the certification vote in Congress. Thank you all for your calls. Folks, again, to obtain documents of freedom, vcyamerica.org, or call 800-729-9829. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the Internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208. Or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.